Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from reversethieves.com. If you would like to contact us to give us information, tell us why we're wrong about One Piece, or why we're so right, or anything else that you want to comment about, you can email us at reversethieves@gmail.com, or you could come on our Discord and talk about all kinds of cool anime and manga stuff.
Now that you said that about One Piece, I wonder if I should make a One Piece thread on the Discord just because then we could post spoilers and stuff and not be afraid. I mostly just write, put like quick reactions or something. But I'm like, maybe if I moved it over here, we could have like a longer discussion about it. Anyway, that's one thing that might be on the Discord coming soon. And this month on the podcast, we are kind of doing just a little bit of catch up,
With the
finishing
side of
some.
mustard?
No, I
Oh,
hate mustard.
I see.
Are you a mustard man?
I actually like mustard,
Like all kinds or like.
yeah. Actually. Yeah. I like Dijon, I like regular yellow mustard.
Tell us in the Discord if you like mustard.
There you go.
So we're talking about some shows that we recently finished or some shows we've gone back and finished. So. Just a little bit of wrap up for November. But first,
It is the Typhoon Minute. So, this month, the first thing I wanted to talk about, which is quick, because we'll talk about it a lot more next month, is that they made some announcements about the New Year's Eve, New Year's Typhoon stream, which is always big. They have a bunch of big Grand Order news, any kind of news for Typhoon for basically the rest of the year. But the big announcement that they had is that Fate Strange Fake is going to be the anime that gets a episode during the New Year's, and there is already a Fate Strange Fake English website as well as a Japanese one.
but you said we're going to talk about this next month, but next month is December, or does it come out
Oh,
before?
no. It comes out in January. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot this is the November podcast. Time is an illusion.
Time is a
Lunchtime.
flat circle.
Lunchtime's always so. So yes, in January we will discuss this a lot more. And there'll probably be like one or two more little announcements. Yeah, like the big reveals of like any kind of new anime or game or stuff will be unveiled during the New Year's stream. But I just thought Fate Strange Fake was interesting. And the fact that it already has an English website is telling that, what do you call it? And they definitely have plans to release it in English as well. The second thing is, as I've been mentioning, the release of Witch on a Holy Night is getting sooner, and now pre-orders are up for the US release of the new version with English subtitles. It's most important if you get like the limited edition and want the art book, which is the version that I pre-ordered last month. That's to connect with the Witch on a Holy Night anime movies that are coming out. And then the last thing was that the Chidelia Knight Cup, otherwise known to most people as Morgana, as in Morgana Le Fay Fest, was happening. That's the like year-end lottery box event that always happens. And like Morgana Le Fay has quickly become one of the more popular FGO characters. People really liked her in Avalon Le Fay, and she's like quickly just climbed the ranks, and her and her fairy knights are all there. And the new servant was Britomart, who was like a kind of a legendary like English knight figure, and she's kind of like has a lot of parallels to Bradamante. In fact, she's kind of considered like the English version of Bradamante. The interesting other thing was the announcement that Brittle Mart is the last new servant they're having for the rest of the year. They're not going to have any new servants added to the game till January, which is just unusual because they usually... So it's just going to be like rerun banners for the rest of the year, which is makes some people very happy, some people very upset. But I thought it was interesting that they like came out and made a big announcement that she's the last new servant for the year. And other than that, next month is the last part chapter in South America of the first part of part two of FGO. So
there was like the word part like four times in whatever you were saying.
So
like part two of part one of part seven of the Spanish part.
Yes.
Got it.
I'm just looking forward to the New Year's stream and all the little juicy secrets that will be in there. So I'm guessing that next month will be a little sparse because it seems like Type Moon is kind of like resting up for January. So we'll see how much I have to talk about when I see you next time, Type Lunatics. So we are doing a little wrap up. You know, I think we've discussed last month that, you know, we've been doing a lot of like introductions, but we haven't like gone back and like said what we thought about a lot of these shows, you know, because you could have very high expectations that are, you know, crash and burn. I can't think of any series that we watched. Wonder Egg.
Did we talk about the end of Wonder Egg?
I still have not watched the Wonder Egg movie because you so hated it that like I've just...
Did I watch the movie? I don't think I watched. Maybe I didn't watch the movie. Oh, you just or you just mean like the last?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The last ending. Like the big yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Was it in more than a half an hour? And then I guess I thought it was a movie.
I can't remember.
But yeah, you just seemed so, you.
I did not. I just was just wondering. Maybe we did. So maybe we didn't ever talk about it. I don't know. I didn't like it. Everyone, there. That's your quick review.
And it was like, Kate's review was so negative. I just never, like...
It just caught me at a bad time, I guess.
But hopefully we'll talk about a few things we like a little more than...
I feel like everything I'm talking about today, I liked. So That's the kind of podcast I want to do. I don't want to come back and talk about all the things I hate.
So, I have finished quite the journey, as I have finished Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, all 100 episodes.
Wow. I'm, like, excited that you finished it, and so, like, because that had to have, you know, that happened to be 100 episodes, how long ago was that, and now you get to talk about the end.
Plus, like, they had to stop a little while for COVID, and then there was that whole Toei hack that, like, took out, like, all the Toei anime for, like, a month and a half, or maybe 2 months.
I think it was just a month.
Okay. But, yeah, it was definitely, like, definitely put them all behind schedule. So, Dragon, if people don't remember or did not hear our older episode, Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai is based on a decently old manga from the 80s. That originally got an anime, but the anime started and finished before the manga ended. So, like 3/4 of the way through, they just were like, here's your anime original ending. Back when anime original endings were far more of a thing. And so, this new anime was supposed to basically be a... let's redo it. Almost like for some, I wonder now, I was about to say for some of the kids, but I wonder if like Full Metal Alchemist is old enough that like a lot of the kids are even like, what's Full Metal Alchemist? racist.
Yes.
Old man.
Yeah, but how many, like, kids...
Listen to...
Also, quotation marks for kids, because, mm-hmm. like...
Yeah.
Zoomers, if you're listening to this podcast, I want to hear from you.
Do you remember Full Metal Alchemist? But yeah, in a kind of Full Metal Alchemist brotherhood sort of way, they're going to be a little more straight to the anime and finally give, you know, an animated version of the proper ending of the manga. You know, and it's very classic Dragon Quest, young hero. Although I guess a little different that he's a young hero who grows up on an island of monsters but wants to be a hero for everybody, monsters and humans. And, you know, eventually gets pulled into, you know, the Dark Lord from the last, you know, Great Calamity is back, and he has to be the hero to rise up and defeat him. But it turns out that the Dark Lord was working for an even darker lord the whole time, and now Dai must not only defeat, the Dark Lord, but his boss. And so yeah, like the first two thirds are, you know, about defeating the, you know, the original bad guy, and then the last third is all about, you know, the real big bad guy behind the scenes.
Basically, the Japanese RPG setup.
Yes.
Where, you know, the second in command is who you think is the boss. So.
And you know, it also has the classic, you know, this guy has 6 generals, and then when they're all defeated, the big bad guy actually has a whole new set of generals. Mm-hmm.
I remember watching the first episode together, and it had almost like a collect 'em all. There wasn't there, like, so, with the monsters?
I was just about to mention it. It's so funny that there's this like collect 'em all like capsule, like almost like Pokeball thing, and like after about 6 episodes. Except for one point where it comes back. That now, like, they totally dropped that.
Oh.
That, like just forgotten. It, like, comes up one more time when, like, for minor spoiler, like, one of the bad guys captures, like, the grandfather character who, you know, raised Dai and traps him in a capsule and makes him fight Dai. And then they get around that. And those capsules never come up again. They are so forgotten that it is. And even that is really, really early on. Like, I don't know. It almost seems like the author, like, played with that idea and was like, I hate it. It's gone forever.
I feel like that happens, you know, and it happens a lot more. You see it in, like, much earlier manga. Like, there's a lot of manga where you can see that they've changed their mind, like, as they're writing it. I feel like you don't see that as much anymore. It's interesting that they decided to keep that in, I guess just because they wanted it to be, like, a one-to-one adaptation. But, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's, and also just, you know, on a certain level, it does help because he's, like, so low level and doesn't have, like, the ability to do magic and eventually find out what was, like, the barrier keeping him from magic. But, like, so it basically lets him fight harder foes until he's, like, leveled up enough that he can fight them on his own. But, yeah, it is interesting that, like, that aspect of that show gets so dropped. It is, like... kind of amusing. I will say the thing that I found a little interesting was, not once again to give too many spoilers, I'm going to be very vague. So the 100th episode, the first half of that episode is like the end of the big boss battle. And then, like, they're like, oh boy, we defeated the big boss. That was a crazy fight. Nobody thought you could win, Dai. But we all worked together and we did it. And then it's like, ha ha! I'm secretly a character that you thought was dead and I'm still alive. And I'm like the secret boss. And then, like, defeating him isn't that hard. He just had, like, more of a good positioning. It's like, of that half, I'd say 7/8 of that last half, and then the final, basically all the falling action is basically in the credits.
Wow.
Because it was funny, you and I and a bunch of our friends who get together for anime night were discussing like just Japanese and Asian storytelling in general, and how like this very like very Asian idea of like climax and then story over, falling action, what is that shit? And like there was a little bit, but like basically all the epilogue and any kind of falling action was just in the end credits,
which is 90 seconds or something.
Yeah,
so
and then there's like one like 2 second scene at the end, and it's like the end. And I was like, wow,
100 episodes and 90, like 2 minutes of falling action.
No, yeah, it's like a minute. Yeah, you were more, it's like 90 seconds, like a minute and a half of falling action plus a 3 second extra scene. And it's like, so you're not gonna fall. Once again, I can't, you're not gonna follow up on that one thing that that character said that seemed like you would at least want to hint at. No? Cool. It's not like the overall big, you know, storyline is not over, but for 100 episodes, 90 seconds of falling action seems kind of, I mean, I didn't need 2 episodes of falling action, but I don't know, 10 minutes would have been
right, like the second half of the episode. I mean, though, I assume, I'm making an assumption here, mm-hmm. but like it seems like it was a very straightforward series. It wasn't real complex.
Oh, yeah. I just, you know, once again, it's one of those things where I didn't need, you know, now that Leona is queen of this kingdom, what are her fiscal policies?
Don't act like you wouldn't be interested in that.
All right. Al would watch that show. Al is also not expecting it. From Dragon Quest, The Adventures of Dai.
Okay, that's good. That's fair.
I will say that if you were curious, like, who would be a fan of this show? It is unflinchingly like an 80s shonen manga / anime. It is very much...
Adventure.
Yeah, an adventure manga. And it's that very old, like, once again, I feel weird saying it, but at this point, it's kind of true. It feels like it's very, to a lot of people, would be a very old school type of adventure series. And I don't know, I think there's an audience for that. It also very clearly, like, harkens back to the length of a series like that. Like, I don't think anyone would casually do a 100 episode long adventure series anymore. Or if they did, they would definitely break that up into like chunks. I mean, I don't dislike, in fact, I very much enjoy a lot of modern shonen and shonen adventure, but I don't know. I think it was just like, it was fun nostalgia to go back to a very distinctly like 80s style of like storytelling and character building and like just overall story structure, which I think it's like a well done version of that. But it is very much also a, because I kind of heard this, I've used this line a few times, just in my personal life, because I just like it. But it is a very simple meal made well. Like, there aren't a lot of, like, major, like, like, boy, you really bucked the genre with that. But I feel like it does a lot of what you expect from an 80s adventure manga, especially of the Dragon Quest vein, well. And I don't enjoy it at least someone to watch 100 episodes of it.
I was going to say, clearly there was something about it. I mean, I know you, people might not remember since we did talk about it a long time ago, but I know you had the nostalgia for this series in particular, right? From the original Dragon Quest?
No, the Dragon Quest anime I want, like, it's actually a different one.
Oh, okay.
It's a completely different one. Because, in that one, the main kid kind of has, a Native American, influence thing. And it's, a drunken wizard and stuff. That one I have a nostalgia for is, I could look it up, but that's a different Dragon Quest anime. Because that Dragon Quest anime played for a while in the U.S., but we never got the whole thing. It kind of got, it was, they always put it on at really weird hours. And it never got that Sailor Moon kind of fan following. And they, I think they only got through a third of the way through the actual series. I just think Digital Tech should license that one so I could actually finish that one up. But Dragon Quest Adventures of Dai is a different anime, although they're both from about the same era.
And they're both called they're both called Dragon Quest? That's so interesting.
The other one had a different subtitle, though.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess there's tons of Dragon Quest games and stuff, so.
And I don't know if that one was based on a manga or if that one was a totally original Dragon Quest story. But that's the one I have a lot of nostalgia for and would love to see that whole thing.
Then it wasn't even nostalgia driving Al to watch this. So clearly there was something about it that you in it for 100 episodes.
I did watch anime in the 80s. So, a return to that kind of storytelling is, nostalgic for old men like me.
It's interesting that for them to do it now and to do 100 episode anime seems so unusual. Because even their big franchises, Precure, and the such, really only get, 50 episodes, so.
I'm guessing it was just real regarded, but, it was kind of, always a major sticking point that it got that, anime original ending, which, everybody always loves those. They're always, fan favorites that never
become notorious or infamous or anything like that.
So I don't know that much about the original Dragon Quest Adventure of Dai anime. If people were that was a decent anime original ending, or if it was that ending was the devil. You've got to kill the devil. But I enjoyed it. It's a major time commitment. Basil from the awesome cast was someone else is watching that too. We should do a podcast about that.
You should.
So there you go. If you listen to Basil, I finally finished it. So we can have me on the awesome cast and we can talk about Dragon Quest Adventures of Dai. So for completely opposite, if Dragon Quest is about, believing in yourself and what do you call it, the power of friendship and, just good old shonen goodness, let's talk about pretty much the exact opposite, which is Made in the Abyss, Season 2, The Golden City of the Scorching Sun.
This series is always tricksy because I love the design of the show, and then I have been deeply, deeply warned against it.
So, I didn't really think too much about you when I watched
the first. Thanks.
Well, no, I didn't think Kate would love this or hate this. I didn't really but the minute I finished the second season, I realized this series was actually worth warning Kate to never watch it.
We finally got there.
So if Kate after season one said, "Hey Al, I'm interested in watching Made in Abyss. After season one, I would like give a, oh, these are the pros of why I think you might like it. Here are the cons of things that might turn you off. After season two, I'm like, there is no way Kate would enjoy this series. It's literally like, I can't say it's the anti-Kate, but it is definitely just a show that would never be for Kate. Kind of like how you just like, after watching that first episode of Blue Lock, were like, sorry guys, I'm out of here. You can keep your shonen sports show. Kate's going this way and you guys are going that way. I would easily say that if like, gun to her head, Kate would rather watch all of Blue Lock.
Oh, I don't know where you were going with that. And I was like, ow, I will watch any anime over getting shot.
Like, but if you were like, you have to watch one or get shot, you would pick Blue Lock in a millisecond over Made in Abyss.
What happened in this second season? I mean, obviously no full-on spoilers, but man, I can't wait to hear now what goes on.
So, the general story of Made in Abyss, if people are unaware, is on this one island, there is this giant gaping hole that just leads amazingly down so far, people don't know where the end of this hole is. And inside this amazing gaping hole is... Because we're both 10 and we both...
It's fine, go.
Are all these amazing magical artifacts. Like you, and the deeper you go, the more powerful the magical artifacts are. The only problem is twofold. One, also in the thing, which are far more plentiful than the magical artifacts, are horrible monsters that just eviscerate people, usually in the most horrible ways possible. And the deeper you go down, there's basically a curse of the abyss, and basically almost like the bends. Mm. If you come up the wrong way or too fast, basically the curse kills you and or like horribly maims you. And so essentially there's this whole industry formed of people who live high risk, high reward lives of diving in and trying to get back out as best they can without getting too much of the curse of the abyss with, you know, fantastic items. You know, if you get far down enough and come out, you could become basically a rich person by selling these things. And of course, because this world is horrible, there's also, since a lot of these people will leave kids behind, a whole orphanage system that then raises these kids to become cave dwellers to make money for the orphanage system. And the main girl is one of these orphans who's been raised to be a, you know, abyss dweller. And she finds a robot that everyone speculates comes from the bottom level of the abyss, but he has no memory. And they're both basically going down to try to find her mother. And so the first adventure is kind of like the highest levels of the abyss, and it's them going from one level to another, and so maybe three episodes, and in each episode will be a different layer of the abyss they go on. Then there was a movie, but this whole second season is just that one layer of the abyss where they find like the first like city. Most of the time there's usually at most maybe like one eccentric person or like a team of people who have just like carved out this little kind of safe neat niche in one of the levels. But this is the first time they find like a city with, you know, hundreds of inhabitants. And the whole adventure is there exploring this golden city of the scorching sun. And like almost everybody there has like partially become a monster because of various things that I won't go into. Some of it's the Curse of the Abyss, some of it's other things. And then kind of like exploring slash being stuck in this whole city for the entire season. And like one of the main things is like everything has like value and everything has to be traded for value. And so like that's a major whole theme. And like now everything about being sold for value, also body parts are extremely valuable. So there is just body horror all the time in this whole season. Like, and Kate is already shaking her head, and like, I won't go into it, but like, body horror, body horror, body horror, body horror. It's like, if there's an episode without body horror in this whole season, what do you call it? It is definitely the exception that proves the rule. And it is also the exception I do not remember. If you want misery porn and just like, because like how most of the inhabitants came down here, their story is sad. What happens to them is sad. How they leave the city is super sad.
Boy, that's a vibe.
And like there's a little hope in the end, but that hope is a thin layer of hope in an otherwise depression sandwich. This series has a vibe, and it is really going into it in the second season. Like, it was present in the first season, but, like, they double down when they get to this golden city of the scorching sun. Also, you better not dislike trauma to children.
Yikes!
Because adults get trauma, but kids are not spared trauma.
I mean, the series starts out with trauma, so...
Yeah.
Because I have seen the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel...
You ain't seen nothing yet!
I no doubt from what you have said. Do you feel like the things that you liked about it initially are disappearing, or do you feel like...
I mean... The author of the original manga clearly has, like, interesting world building and interesting mechanics, but, like, so I don't mind it, but, like, I will say it was a series that, like, every once in a while I was like, I'm done with you tonight. I'm not gonna, like,
I know what my mindset is right now, and I'm not, I can't do this.
Yeah, like, sorry, I like, there were nights where I'm like, one episode of Maiden Abyss is good, I'm done. good night, Maiden Abyss, I will come back to you in a few days. Like, so I according to my roommate, like, it is extremely popular among the ladies of Hololive EN, but, and I, like, totally get why, but, like, it is distinct, especially in the second season, it is, like, distinctly acquired taste. Because you have to really be willing to deal with, like, the darkness of humanity and, like, decisions. And just, once again, and also, not only just, like, it is... Like, what is happening to the people outside is also, like, a reflection of the darkness on the inside. And, like, the people of that city make some decisions.
The way, I don't know if you would agree with this, Al, but, like, from your description of it, it kind of sounds a little Kino's Journey-like to me.
Yeah, like, what if you just, like... The first season, like, introduces you to all this concepts, and it's like, all right, now that the, what do you call it, depression and dark side of humanity tutorial is over.
Tutorial.
The real Dark Souls begins here. Because, like, they start with two members, and they gain a permanent party member at like the last story arc of the first season. And she's like the character who first really kind of like starts taking off the training wheels of darkness and depression. Which is odd because she's probably the most optimistic of the characters, other than a few like the spare moments. But like season two was like, see what we did over here with FAPTA? That's all of this season.
I do feel like if the Kino's Journey comparison works, I feel like I like Kino's Journey, although sometimes it was like, okay, gotta stop here. But at least Kino keeps moving. Like, there's like, I don't know. Do you feel like
it's
different?
Well, I do wonder, like, because the first season, you kept moving. It was like I said, it would be two or three episodes, you'd be on this level. By the end of, like, the third episode, they've, you know, gotten, you know, they figured out how to get to the next level, different, you know, different architecture, different type of fauna, different type of problems. This whole season is just them in the Scorching City.
Oh man, imagine a Kino Journey season where she's just in one of those like really bad cities. I mean, okay, a lot of the cities are really bad, but not always. Like sometimes you get like a surprise episode where everything is okay. But imagine it was just 13 episodes of her in one of those places. I couldn't do it.
So yeah, when I finished that season, like, it was definitively just a show you could never watch. Like, the first season, I feel like I could still possibly see you maybe enjoying it in kind of like a Kino's Journey way. By the end of the second season, it was just no longer a show Kate could ever watch. And take any kind of enjoyment away from it. Even if, like, I do feel like there's, like, a hidden, like, anti-capitalist message in that whole, like, city about value and, like, value always being the most important thing. And, like, all these characters being obsessed with value.
Look, you can have great themes, yeah. But that doesn't mean, you know, but, it's watchable for everyone.
Even before all the depression and everything, the fact that every gosh darn episode in that season was like, we've got to have at least one moment of horrible body horror.
Can't do it. Although, you know, sometimes I get like invested so much that these feeling like that's how I feel, right? I won't diverge into it too much, but like this is how I feel about Attack on Titan at this point, where I'm like, I'm so invested in finding out the answer. Like, I must know. Like, we don't even know when we're getting the fucking final season, final part five, final end, the end, final, whatever. Part one. But like,
I thought they had a date up.
Do they?
For the next season of that. Hopefully last season of...
Don't you dare say next season, Al! Don't you dare! But I feel like that one, I'm so far in that it's like, no, And I do really want to know. So I'm glad to not have gotten invested in Maiden Abyss where it would get to a point where I was like, but I really want to know. So I just don't have to go there. You think you'll continue?
Yeah, I what do you call it?
If there is more, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it seems fairly popular. It'll probably be like another year and a half break. Plus, I think like the mangaka is super famous for being quick. So I don't think there's definitely more manga. But I remember somebody saying that like they'd have to pause for even...
To catch up, or so the manga can get far
ahead. Yeah, I had to make a full new season. Like, they're still in the middle of the next storyline. So, there probably won't be a new anime for a while. Does that give him, you know, me some time to recover after? The clearly super happy. Everybody makes it out fine.
Optimistic ending, yeah.
Everybody in that city is super cool and, what do you call it, having parties every day, living their best lives. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see. You'll get to see how much darker it can get by season 3. All right. So, well, now if we're going from something that dark, I think Yuri Deco is pretty, like, bubbly and bright and maybe in a completely opposite vein of that. So I finally finished this series. This was the most recent TV anime from Science Saru. And it's a series that's a one, it's about like social media credit and the getting hearts or likes and kind of the breakdown of that system a little bit from our main character Barry when her way of interacting with that world gets a little messed up. So she has like one eye in the real world and one eye in the virtual world.
So she's become Spike Spiegel?
Yep. Exactly. That's basically the whole show. And then the other part of it is like this, they eventually form a little detective agency that solves crimes in, not crime, actually they don't solve crimes. They solve mysteries in this, the outskirts of this society. And then they, it comes back together as they're investigating sort of what is going on in sort of the virtual world and the real world. Also, there, I just want to mention there's like a naming convention in the series that has to do with like, because there's Mark Twain and they live in the city, Tom Sawyer, and then the main characters are Hack, Barry, and Finn. I don't know if there's any like meaning behind, I don't know enough, I guess, about really like the literature of Mark Twain to know if it's just like, this was just like a naming convention that we used, or if like there's any specific relevance to it.
Do you feel like today's Tom Sawyer is a mean guy? Could it all just be a really large brush reference?
Maybe. So I just wanted to mention that because like it comes up, well, they might come up while I'm talking about it, but I don't know if it has any deeper meaning or if it was like, yeah, this was just like a naming scheme.
See, the weird thing I found that was like, once again, I'm not as connected to the internet ebbs and flows of the anime thing, but I feel like I constantly, even in my little bubble, heard about like Hands Off the Ezekin like all the time. And I was surprised I didn't hear, because like, about this show as much.
Mm.
Like I didn't see like Thinky Piece articles or Thinky Piece videos about it. Whereas I saw a bunch of those for Hands Off the Ezekin.
I think that's pretty interesting to me. I mean, Ezekin has that like animation. It's about animating. You know, I feel like I understand kind of, I can see why a certain crowd really liked that one. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think this one, I'm surprised that people aren't talking about it, I guess because I think thematically it has more theming about, like, real world than, like, you know, Ezekin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because this is kind of, like, what we kind of discover over the course of the season is that the, let's just call them the ruling body of this world is moderating reality via like social media and the virtual world. So like there's an erasure of like any distressing news and what the government, you know, believes to be distressing news, or like erasure of history, or like there's, once we start to learn a little bit more about some of the characters' backstories, there are stories about places in this world that don't have the highest technology, but they really want to be part of like the, you know, like sort of hip social credit system. And so they're using this technology illegally, but that also like illegality allows them to ignore some of their real world problems. And like ultimately that's what the government wants, is that it wants you to like care about getting likes as opposed to worrying about pollution in your neighborhood. Because if you are looking through the virtual world, that pollution is actually, or like the trash is like cute things instead of like the actuality of what you would be seeing if you weren't using like virtual glasses.
I love you, carcinogen sod.
Yeah, like so, I mean, it's not just about pollution, yeah. but that's one aspect of it. And so like, it becomes the story about these outsiders who are looking at the world through the like the lens of reality and like experiencing things directly and believing what you're seeing with your own eyes versus only believing what you're seeing in the virtual space. So like that has like an obvious map onto, it's not too far from any sort of dystopian ideas or anything that we're also like seeing the actual realities of. So I'm surprised that people aren't kind of talking about it more.
I just might be like missing it. Like it might be like, I just might be missing it. And like all the cool people are like discussing like the, you know, greater ramifications of Yuri Deco. It just feels like it didn't have the, I was just a little surprised because I thought Science Horror just had that cachet. Whereas it feels like, and maybe in like, you know, the deep thinker circles, it still does. I just feel like, I was a little surprised that, but it just seems like Hands Off the Egg as the kid just had like that, like easy, digestible appeal, especially to people who would watch anime. Like, here's the anime about anime kids. And they like, whereas I feel like, at least from what I've seen, and I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because it just might be, I'm now disconnected enough that it might just be like missing like the cool people, high thinker circles, but it just felt like it didn't have the same like broad channel appeal that Hands Off the Esken did.
I really liked the style of this series. I do think it is a little slow to get going, and then maybe that's
didn't
help in that, but then it's one of those series where a bunch of things that they're doing for a while seem like they're maybe they're like, oh, I don't, they're just like these one-off, like, you know, but then it's like, oh no, it's not really like these are all like relevant eventually and stuff like that. I liked the ending a lot, because I feel like, you know, you can go different ways with like a broken system, and it's like, oh, do you tear down the system, like revolution, do we tear down the system, or do we fix the system in some way, or do we change the system? I thought that the ending of this series, especially because it was dealing with like kind of a social media aspect, I thought this solution was interesting. And also what I liked about it was that it assumes that technology is not going to go away. And like, I think that as much as, you know, we could get into all kinds of discourse about this, but I do think that as much as we would probably like it, some of us would like it if certain types of technology went away, like they're not probably going to, or they're going to evolve into something else and they're still going to be around. So I think that that felt like a more use the system and fix it and make it a better system than like destroy the system and like no one cares about getting likes anymore or whatever.
Everybody goes outside and touches grass and plays in the fresh air, and nobody plays video games and cares about Facebooks and the Twitters anymore.
Yeah, so I liked that it sort of had a more measured, I guess, ending.
Old man successfully yells at cloud. Old man successfully yells at the cloud.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah, so I liked it in the end. I recommend it. I thought it was interesting. And also it has like one of the best openings and opening songs, I think, of the whole year. So it's seeing if people did overlook this one, I recommend going back and finishing it.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, there are a few series from like last season and this season that I want to try to get a little steam on. That might be one of the ones I, especially since I finished, you know, the absolute last ride of the year that is really called Made in the Abyss. Let us return. Let us mix the two. What if we took the, what do you call it, look at technology and how it affects us, and we took the despair of Made in the Abyss and
put you just can't escape it, Al.
Put it together, we could get Cyberpunk Edgerunners.
And I do apologize to everyone, including Al, because I believe the last time we talked about this, I was like, I'll finish it too, and then we'll talk about it, and then I didn't do that.
So, Cyberpunk Edgerunners is the new Studio Triggers. I talked about watching the first episode at Otakon, and then I did a follow up about the broad, basically like the broadcast, like uncensored version of the first episode. And so now I finished the whole series, and I will say that what do you call it? If you think that the Kill la Kill and, you know, general, that Studio Trigger team can only do optimistic stories, well, welcome to Cyberpunk Edgerunner.
Oh, no!
I mean, at least one character has a somewhat bitter.
Maybe I'm glad I didn't go watch this.
I mean, I think, I don't know, I enjoyed the series. I think it is very traditional cyberpunk, where the system is monolithic, and what do you call it? And like, it's like, I was just telling Kate, I just watched this. I just read this article. Actually, I didn't watch it. A Reddit article about like how cyberpunk is over and like the rise and fall of cyberpunk. And its main idea was that like cyberpunk started, and it was this like critique of like technology and warnings about the future, and it had this distinct like punk edge of being like boundary pushing and like cynical and like, you know, once again. And the article just felt like over the years cyberpunk has just gotten more and more commercial, and like the aesthetics of it have just been co-opted into like they kind of like dismissively looked on like Batman Beyond. It's supposed to be cyberpunk, but it's all happy. So, and I'm like, I don't know what Batman Beyond.
I was like, oh, did you watch Batman Beyond? Or anyway.
But I was like, I mean, it's definitely not utterly nihilistic and, you know, like pure mainline me some Nietzsche, but, you know, anyhow, but, you know, and then I think I said this joke before the podcast. I think I've said it on the podcast before, but I'll say the joke again because it's a joke that's not really a joke. We now live in the cyberpunk future with all the worst parts of the cyberpunk future without the cyberware that you can just install in your body.
None of the cool shit, all of the bad shit.
We don't have the flying cars. We don't have, what do you call it, you know, skeletal implants. You know, wire reflexes. But I feel like this is like just like a return to like the, you know, critique of capitalism, critique of technological fetishism. I think Kevin made a really astute observation from the Awesome Cast on the Discord that he's like literally half the problems in the series would not exist if all these characters had proper access to medical care and mental health care. And the series is extremely aware of that fact. But it's in the cyberpunk future where what do you call it? You have the haves and the have nots. If you're the have nots, guess you don't get any of that and just get screwed over as you're used by the machine, even when you think you're fighting against the machine.
Definitely not the world we're living in. Nope, nope, nope.
And what do you call it? Not only do we not allow you to, what do you call it, have access to those things, we found out that we actually incentivize it because it profits us in the end.
Yep. Uh-huh. Fiction. Total fiction.
Yeah, totally made up stuff that is not, what do you call it, not in any way applicable to the real world and the world we live in. So, if you are expecting, the normal Amaishi, our heroes triumph over infinite odds and come out as the underdogs, the cyberpunk, especially the cyberpunk setting of the cyberpunk tabletop game, will not allow that to happen. Because, the story is apropos to that. It is not no one gets anything that they want, but it is heavily foreshadowed, so I don't mind saying most of these characters aren't going to make it out alive. And most of them are going to have horrible endings.
Wow. I do find that kind of surprising.
Which I just, I was surprised that I expected in a Maishi story in a cyberpunk world.
Basically the aesthetics, but none of the
But darkness. He definitely... Now, I think that they said it was a co-project between them and CP Project Red. So maybe, CD Project Red made them have that ending. But I feel like it proves that the Maishi team can do a different kind of story, and I think do it well, and do it I do feel like you do see certain studios or directors or teams you guys are really good at these stories, but when you try to do a story in a different genre or of a different mood, just does not work. You should stick to what, and I feel like if nothing else, it showed that Amaishi and the Studio Trigger team can do a story in a different vein and execute it well and still have a lot of the flourishes they're known for, but not at the expense of the story, the characters, or the genre.
Wow. This kind of makes me even... I mean, I was interested in it, but, this makes me even more interested in it.
I will say, lots of nudity, lots of gore. If nothing else, the nudity is both sexes, so...
I like nudity. Nudity's fine.
I don't think that's really, for anybody listening to this podcast, what do you call it? Not maybe the anime you want to watch with, what do you call it, your parents or we had a coach. Hey, kids! Although, if you're the kind of adult who would go, hey, kids, let's watch a Studio Trigger anime, then you've already made your decisions in life. I don't think Cyberpunk is going to be the series that is I watch kids kill a kill with my kids, but Cyberpunk Edge Runners is where I drew the
they
line.
They could watch Little Witch Academia with their kids.
I guess, yes. But yeah, I guess I always think of Studio Trigger as that, what they call it, the Kill a Kill Studio. So yes, you could watch Little Witch Academia with your kids. And what do you call it? Not have a bunch of people question you as a parent. But if you watched Kill la Kill with your kids, then you'll be fine with Edge Runners.
How much do you feel this is in line with the game? Because it's the same world as the video game that came out?
So, like I said with the first episode, it is very clearly heavily patterned on the video game. So if you're a big fan of the video game, or that's all you know, you will be fine. If you really wanted something that was like the tabletop game, then there are just some, like, mostly like Easter eggs and a few little things, but it is mostly like very clearly defined by the recent Cyberpunk game with Keanu Reeves. That is what it is like. It's drawing on that era of Night City, that era of the world, like that kind of, like, the aesthetic. A lot of the scenes are like they'll do a heist at somewhere that was in the game or something like that. It is very distinctly, you know,
tone and theme and all that is similar, or?
Well, I mean, I'd argue, well, tone and theme is a little harder to pin in the tabletop, only because it's had, like, a bunch of iterations, and I feel like some of the iterations, and I don't know, and I haven't played enough Cyberpunk to be like, it's very much Cyberpunk 3rd edition. Like, I'm sure, like, someone who's deeply into the tabletop could tell you exactly what edition this is the most like. But that's a little beyond my... I do know that, like, the theming is a little different in some of the editions as opposed to the others. So, not, I think, radically different. But you could probably argue that this is closer to certain editions more than others. That is a question for someone who's a little more of a, you know, original tabletop guy. But I mean, it is very distinctly old school classic. If you want to use that person's, it's very old school classic cyberpunk.
That's kind of exciting. I mean, I guess maybe the game sort of reinvigorated the desire for that, but...
And I would go as far as to say, like I said in the last one, especially seeing the ending, I would even argue that this anime is closer to the true cyberpunk aesthetic than actually the game was.
That's kind of what I was wondering, if it went further.
Because I knew a lot of criticism of the game was that there was a lot of cyber, but not a lot of punk. Because, like, you could ignore it, but there were a lot of missions that you could just do for the police and, like, basically be, like, a police, like...
What, like, narc?
Yeah, essentially. And so, like, the fact that, like, all these characters are, like, you know, fuck the system, fuck the police, fuck, you know, like, the oppressors, and, like, actively, like, that is the spirit of the anime, you know, even when, like, it crushes you. I would argue that, like, if you liked the game but thought it needed more punk, then this is definitely the anime.
So, all right, I'm going to watch this. I'm cool. Definitely going to watch this.
Just a lot of cyber butt and a lot of cyber titty.
Great!
Cool.
As long as it's, you know, of age.
Yes.
Like, totally fine. That also makes it feel like it's a different era. Although, like, I feel like all these Netflix anime, because I think this is a Netflix anime, they've got to be, like, the manime of the 90s, apparently. So.
Yeah, no, they're definitely, like, trying to capture that audience.
All right, so I think we'll end with another. All the anime I've been watching, this is why I need to watch Cyberpunk. All the anime I've been watching lately is clearly like virtual world, augmented reality, like the technological future, like it's all that. So we're going to end with, I finally watched all of Dinocoil.
Which is just as filled with just as much nudity,
gore, oh God, I hope not.
Gore and cynicism as Cyberpunk Edgerunner.
And Dinocoil is one of these series that I have, it's been recommended to me endlessly, and, you know, just everyone saying, this is a show you will love, this is a show you will love, you know, and it's also something that I think is beloved by a really specific subsect of the anime community, but certainly doesn't have that like mass appeal or like mass presence. Like, not everybody has seen it.
Well, it didn't help.
Like a hidden gem.
That, like, it didn't help that, like, if I remember, it took a while to get subtitled when it first came out, and then it like took forever to get licensed because it was like. Like, the company that had the rights was, like, a book company that normally didn't do anime and, like, was, like, super hesitant to give out the rights. And essentially, the first person to get the rights was, like, I think they were Australian and they were also a book publisher. So they, and they, the like, the head of the book publisher in Australia, if I remember correctly the story, they really liked Dinocoil, and so, like, as a fellow book publisher, they were able, they had, like, connections, and were able to, like, talk to their fellow book publishers, and then, like, get the licensing rights from them, because, like, everybody else was, like, an anime person, and they didn't want to talk to them, but they were willing to talk to a fellow book publisher, and then once, like, the rights had been, like, solidified, then it was easier for other people outside of Australia to actually get the rights, and that's how we finally got the rights over here.
It took a really long time, and as you can see, it had sort of a fraught licensing history, and then I think it's also just a show that's never going to be like the cool show that everybody's watching, even though I did love it. I think that so many people would really enjoy it. There's so many great things about it, but one thing that I think is really interesting is, so this was made like early 2010. I think it's like 2010. Like it's very early 2010s. And the show is supposed to take place in 2026, which is terrifying because like we will be there very soon. And the series has aged, I think, incredibly well. In terms of not only its themes, but its technology and the animation, actually, I think still holds up and is like it's really a show that I think watching it now, you wouldn't necessarily think it was that old, like more than a decade. So, yeah. Like,
it has that, like, it almost feels kind of like pseudo Ghibli feel to it. And just, like, the character designs and a little bit of the animation. Obviously, it's not going to be, like, the pure we animate on the ones, you know, full Ghibli movie. But you can't expect a non-Ghibli studio to be able to do that for a whole TV series. So,
and so the basic plot of the series is this middle schooler named Yasuko, she moves to Daikoku City. It's 2026. And this is sort of kind of a city of the future where they're kind of testing out a lot of technology. So the city is really cyber, like, it uses augmented reality. there's a lot of technology being used, like, by the city government and all of these places that is not necessarily the way the rest of the world is working, but that's how the city itself works. And she has family there, and kind of we start off where all the kids and most people wear these glasses. And again, it's like an augmented reality sort of thing. And we come to find out there's been some accidents and some kids have died or gone missing from the glasses, and there's some old e-spaces, and there's e-pets, and so kind of all of those things culminate in this very interesting atmosphere. I think that's what I got the most from this mystery, is the opening is amazing, and it sets the tone for the series really well every episode, and this series just has like ton of atmosphere from episode one. And it's both, it's like almost like Twin Peaks-y in its atmosphere. Like you can tell that there's just something not quite right about the things that are happening. And I think it has a really good job of setting the mood with the music and the camera and things like that. And then things start to get even more strange when Isako, another young girl, transfers into the class, and she's like this very powerful hacker. And like she and Yasuko kind of have a friendship rivalry that, takes us through the whole show as all of these kids are running around trying to solve some really hard to explain. I can't explain the mysteries in this show too much because they're complex, I guess, is what I would say. But there is the Children's Detective Bureau that are all working around the city trying to... discover what's going on with the e-spaces and the e-pets and the augmented reality. And like there's a theme that emerges between Isako and Yasuko about lost memories that happens mostly in the second half. I do feel like this series has two distinct parts. And I actually watched the first 13 episodes like, you know, like very quickly. And then I took like a long break, like I think like a month. And then I watched the second half, and like the second half, I couldn't like stop watching. Like the second half of this show is so compelling. And the mysteries are like, there's a reveal and a reveal, and you just have to know what's happening. It's like propulsion in the second half of it. That I loved. And I feel like the first half is kind of meandering.
Yeah, there's a lot more goop-a-doop episodes. Like, everybody remembers, like, the Beard War episode and stuff like that.
And it was, they were fun. There was nothing bad in those episodes. I do think if there is anything about this that makes me feel like it is a little dated is that there is, like, no way this show would get 26 episodes now. Just the way they make anime currently, I just do not think it would get the space to do that. I think it would be, like, 13 episodes. And I think that that would be too bad because I do think, again, the series sets a pretty good tone. And so while I did enjoy the second half much more because of the feel of discovery and, like, the opening up of like all of these secrets. I feel like you needed that first half to like cement you in like what this world was like.
And set up little seeds that would blossom.
And get the relationships of the kids because the kids are so great. Like all of the characters are really good here. Isako and Yasuko, of course, are excellent, but my favorite character is Hadakin, who is trying to solve the mystery of one of his friends who has disappeared and also is voiced by Romy Park. So it's just like, of course, like, he has my heart immediately. And but I loved this, I loved everything. I loved the characters. I I even really liked the way the technology works and sort of the way they explain what happens and what has happened to characters who have lost their memories and how that occurs in the end. I really felt really satisfied with where it went. And even if it gets like a bit metaphysical at times, I don't think it goes too far with it. And it, I feel like it still felt like the pieces fit together really well.
I brought this up and I said we'd discuss it more, but I did feel like the most jarring part, and like when we watched what was it, Space Boys and Gravity Girls, or
Orbital Children?
Oh yeah, Orbital Children. I'm sorry, I forget that the Japanese name was long, but yeah, when we watched Orbital Children, when you were like shocked by like the kind of weirdness in the last episode of that thing, I was like, I watched Dental Coil. I was prepared for this, and now you kind of took it from the opposite direction. You watched Orbital Children, so I feel like you were a little more prepared for at least like the how Dental Coil not ends, but at least reveals some major things in the climax. How did you feel about like that? That just, you kind of mentioned that he does get a little weirdly metaphysical.
It does. I don't think it's, I honestly think Orbital Children was more extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe it was because, again, like the truncated timeline of Orbital Children. But I felt like Orbital Children felt a little bit more, I thought it was more in a more extreme version. I thought in Dino Coil, like, it still felt grounded to me in its like exploration of it. I didn't find it as jarring, but maybe it's because I had already seen sort of the theming of this person. But I thought the themes I thought were different also in Dinner Coil than they were in Orbital Children. So like,
it's weird because I have like the exact opposite thing, and I just wonder if it's like the first time it shocked you and the second time you're like a little more, like you're a little more used to it, but it might just be that like I was just jarred by it the first time, where I was like, I was almost expecting it. I was like, the minute they said Dental Coil, I was like, oh, I'm interested in this, but I'm expecting a weird ending. And I was like, and that's exactly what I got. So maybe it was just because like I was primed for it, but maybe it was less jarring in the first one. But since I did not expect it at all in the first one I saw, it like took me for a loop more.
That's definitely possible. I do feel like the atmosphere in those two different things are different. And maybe it was because of the atmosphere of Dino Coil, it didn't feel as jarring to me. I mean, you said it was jarring to you, Al, so that doesn't necessarily track. But I guess when I said this reminded me a little of Twin Peaks, I think because Twin Peaks is also like, oh, no. Like, there is sort of, this is not like David Lynch, okay? I'm not at all saying it is even anywhere near that.
Yasuko never does any backwards talking while, what do you call it, while a little person dances.
But I feel like in terms of sort of melding a couple of, it's just the atmosphere to me, it made more sense, I guess. Orbital Children didn't have the same atmosphere as Dental Coil, I don't think.
Maybe also because I was in this, it might also just be a difference of mindset, whereas you saw it as like cyberpunk Twin Peaks. I was like in the mindset of like cyberpunk Studio Ghibli, so.
Maybe, because like, you know, like it's just like the mist of the e-spaces, and like it just has this feeling, a little bit of an otherworldly feeling to it. But I just felt so like satisfied.
Oh, I mean, I think it's a really good ending. I was just like, I was just a little like, I didn't expect it for some of those reveals to come how they did.
And a couple other things I wanted to mention were just that I love the Searchies, even though technically they're bad, but they're just so like adorable that you just want to give them hugs. And I would like an e-pet. Like, the only thing bad about this show was that it desperately made me want an e-pet, and also like some bad things happened to some e-pets in here, and it was like really hard to watch sometimes. But it was like, why doesn't this technology freaking exist? Like,
give me my idol right now.
Give me my cyber dog. And I just want to say, the mystery of 4423, like, I was so deeply invested in, like, wanting, I felt so good with all of it. I was just like, yes, like, everything about this is just so good. Just, like, the character growth of Yasuko and Isako is just, man. I thanks everybody. I mean, Al, of course, was a huge advocate for this show. Other people I know were just like, how has Kate not seen this show? I know it's a Kate show. Like, other people too.
Just like made it a miss, Kate show.
Oh, God. Just like really appreciate everybody. You are all right. You all get gold stars. I loved it. I probably loved part two a lot more than I loved part one, but there were still, like, great, great moments in that first part. And if you haven't seen it, like me, I can't recommend it enough. It is streaming on Netflix, which makes it really easy for you guys to get it. I don't know if the Blu-rays are still available. I did watch it on Blu-ray, but luckily it is easily streaming at this point. So there's just no reason. Just do yourself a favor. Watch this over, like, the next month, you know, when you have a bunch of downtime, maybe during the holidays. It's just, it was really good. It just had, just so good.
And unlike Cyberpunk, I feel like it is a series you could watch with kids and, like, them get something out of it.
And again, I feel like it has aged well, so I don't think it would feel out of place. I think it still has a lot of really interesting ideas about technology and, like, you know, how we should be thinking about it, how it might be used, how it could be abused. Orbital Children is also this way, but, you know, that's, like, came out very recently. It's just that, however this creator is thinking about technology, they just have such, you know, like, it's just amazing to me because it doesn't feel so outlandish like some technology where you're like, I mean, that's cool, right? But, like, I don't believe it. But in this case, I feel as though this person is able to kind of, if not predict actual technology, predict, like, some uses of technology and, like, some downfalls of technology in a way that we haven't thought about them before. Like, when I watch their stuff, I'm like, oh, I didn't even think of that yet. Like, as, like, a consequence or, like, a use or, like... And so it's just kind of amazing. And I think you see that a lot in Dinner Coil as well. So highly, highly recommended. It only took me 10 years to watch it, everybody. So you can be there too. It's not too late. Make Dino Coil everybody's secret Santa from now on.
Yeah, I do remember for a few years, like, because, like, 1 year, I remember a bunch of people got it, and, like, the next year, the people who got it recommended it to other people in Secret Santa. So I remember, like, for 2 or 3 years, that went around just, like, people, like, getting recommended it and then passing it along to, like, the next person who hadn't watched it. So
it's a beautiful thing. All right. So that wraps up another month of the Speakeasy podcast. In December, we will be doing Anime Secret Santa and a few other maybe wrap-up stuff and maybe even talk about some non-anime things that we loved from the year. See you next time.
See you next time.